Let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Charlie's position is that the perfect, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't hear him correct me, the perfect of 1 Corinthians 13 verse 10 is the second coming of Christ. But I can prove that's not so. That's not talking about the second coming of Christ. We can look at this in the context and prove it. Let's look at verse 13. Now notice in verses 8 through 10, we've been talking about these things in part will be done away. Not the perfect, Charlie. You must have misunderstood me. The parts will be done away. The perfect won't be done away. We have the perfect right here. The perfect completed New Testament. Okay? Now in contrast to these things being done away, notice verse 13. It says, "And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity." Now, let's define these first two words in the Greek of verse 13. Because when you're defining a word in the Bible, it's best to go back and define the Greek word, not the English word. This word translated "and" in the Greek here is "de." In our letters, it would be "de." Vine defines that as "but" and "now," often implying an antithesis. Many of your translations will say "but" there, "but now." And that's because there's a contrast being on. The word "now," Vine defines with the expression "with logical import." So both of those words are indicating a logical import. Now, I'm going to go back to football again. Please excuse me. To help you understand what we mean by logical now, we could say we are debating now, right at this moment. Or you could say now in the logical sense. Here's an example in English. Auburn didn't win any national championships in the 1970s, but now Alabama did. I don't mean now they're winning national championships. No, not, far from it. Alabama's not doing good at all. But I mean, in contrast to the fact that Auburn didn't win any national football championships in the 70s, but now Alabama did, meaning, in contrast to that, they won them then in the 1970s. It's now with a logical import, and that's what Vines is saying about this word. So what we have is a contrast being presented to us in verse 13. Verses 8, 9, and 10 are saying these miraculous gifts are going to stop at some time, but faith, hope, charity, they're going to continue on. See? So the prophecy, the tongues, the miraculous knowledge, there'll come a time when they stop, but faith and hope and charity will continue on. All right? Now, to finish my point, I want to establish for you that faith and hope will stop at the second coming of Christ in the sense they're being talked about here. The need for faith and hope will be done away with the second coming of Christ. Let's read two or three verses to help us to see that, although I think you would agree with that. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 6 through 8 says, "Therefore we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. But we are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body, to be present with the Lord." What he's saying is that right now we walk by faith, not by sight. But when we get to heaven, we might say, when we're with the Lord, present with the Lord, it won't be by faith anymore, it'll be by sight. You won't have faith anymore. You will have sight instead. Now we have to walk by faith. Then we'll walk by sight, he's saying. Now, couple that with Hebrews 11, verse 1, and it helps us to continue to understand this point that I'm making, though I don't think Charlie would disagree that faith and hope will stop at the second coming of Christ. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." Faith is believing in something based on evidence that you can't see or feel. It's other kind of evidence, like testimony from witnesses. We have that kind of thing going on in trial. Somebody murdered somebody and you get evidence. The witness says, "I saw it." Another witness says, "I saw him murder it." You conclude then that the person is guilty of murder based upon witnesses. Even if you didn't actually see it, you can conclude that based upon evidence is what we say. So we believe in God, not that we've seen him or shaken his hand, literally, but we believe him because of other types of evidence. Like, well, if there's not a God, how did the moon get there? That's good evidence. If there's not a God, how did the stars get there? That's good evidence. That's faith. You can't see or touch God, but you can believe he's there because of evidence. That's all we're saying. But when you get to the second coming of Christ and you're sitting there in heaven with God, and you can shake Jesus' hand, so to speak, it's not faith anymore. It's sight. And then Romans chapter 8, verse 24 makes the same point about hope. "For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for?" In other words, once you get what you're hoping for, it's not hope anymore. Say the young boy is hoping for a bicycle on December 25th. So maybe he's been thinking about that for a month or two. He's hoping for that bicycle on December 25th. He's hoping for it. December 25th gets here, he's got the brand new red bicycle. He's got it. He doesn't hope for it anymore. He's got it. You see, that's the point. Once you get to the second coming of Christ, you've got it. You've got what you've been hoping for. You've got what you had faith in. All right, now what have we established from these verses? Faith and hope will stop. The need for it will stop at the second coming of Christ. We'll have what we're hoping for. We will see God. We won't have to have faith in Him anymore. We can shake Jesus' hand. But we've already learned from 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13, that when that which is perfect has come, the gifts will be done away, stop, but faith and hope will continue on past that which is perfect. It says at the time they stop, they will stop, but now abideth faith, hope, and charity. These things are going to continue on past that which is perfect. So if we know that faith and hope continue on past that which is perfect, but they stop at the second coming of Christ, then we know that that which is perfect cannot refer to the second coming of Christ. There's got to be some time in there. Faith and hope will continue on that which is perfect, continue on past that, but then they'll stop at the second coming of Christ. There's got to be some time in there when faith and hope will exist, and that is after that which is perfect has come, but before the second coming of Christ. Do you see that? Now, that doesn't really help us to see what that which is perfect is. I did that in my last speech. It helps us to prove and understand what that which is perfect is not. It cannot be what Charlie says it is, the time of the second coming of Christ. No, it cannot be that, because faith and hope will keep on going past that which is perfect, but they will stop at the second coming of Christ. Do you see that? I hope you understand it. If you don't, ask me more about it after the debate. I'll be glad to expand and enlarge upon that to help you understand. You have to understand something before you can intelligently agree or disagree. I beg of you to try to understand first what we're saying. We're trying to prove to you what we believe by the Bible. But if you're so, I'm not accusing of this, but if you're so closed-minded that you don't even understand it, if you don't listen enough to even understand it, then you can't make a reasonable choice about whether it's true or not. Understand it first, and then once you understand it, you can evaluate and see if it's true. Now, back in Zechariah chapter 13, Charlie said, made a point. In about verse 2, it talked about the prophets going out of the land. He says, well, if the prophets are gone, you do away with Jesus. That was his point. Well, you notice I didn't say that Jesus would be gone away in that sense. It says the prophets will go out of the land. Now, this is a spiritual passage. It's figurative language here. You can look at verses 3 and 4 and see it's highly figurative. It's saying that the prophets will pass out of the land of the Messiah's rule. In other words, out of the church. Those who are being ruled by Jesus. Oh, they'll continue on to be false prophets, verses 3 and 4. But among the people of God, you won't have true prophets anymore. It's out of the land of the Messiah's rule. And so what we were contending for, Charlie, in our first speech is not that you wouldn't have Jesus in heaven, or the prophet Paul or the prophet Mark wouldn't be in heaven. We're not saying that. What we're saying is that in the church, down here, where we're in the church, the land of the Messiah's rule, the church, I guess is the way Charlie put it, and I agree with that, there will not be any true prophets. So it doesn't do away with Jesus. It just says that what I was trying to prove in this debate, that we don't have prophets today in the church. That's where they were to go out of the land of the Messiah's rule, out of the people who are governed by God and follow God. There will be no more true prophets. Now, back in the Old Testament, they had prophets in the land of the Messiah's rule. True prophets among God's people. In this first century of the New Testament, they had prophets in the land of the Messiah's rule. The people who were letting themselves be governed by the Messiah, there were true prophets among them. He's saying there will come a time when that will stop. Now, when is that time? Does anybody remember how I proved that that was the time period of the first coming of Christ, not the second coming of Christ, when the true prophets would go out of the land of the Messiah's rule, out of the church? Not the second coming, but the first coming. But we looked over and over at the context at this phrase, in that day, a time period. Not a 24-hour day, but a time period. We showed from chapter 11, verses 12 through 13, about Judas betraying Jesus for 12 pieces of silver. We showed that was quoted in the New Testament. Zechariah 12, verse 10 was quoted in the New Testament when Jesus died on the cross and they pierced Him. Chapter 13, verse 1 is obviously talking about Jesus shedding His blood for our sins. The fountain. He's not going to die again at the second coming. That's the time period of the first coming. We showed from chapter 13, verse 7, that Jesus Himself quoted that. The sheep shall be smitten and the shepherd shall be smitten, but the sheep shall be scattered. He quoted that the night before His death to refer to His death and His disciples being scattered. And as I said, Peter denying Him three times is a perfect example of them being scattered. You see that? These verses are quoted in the New Testament to prove that the time period talked about in this context is the time period of the first coming of Christ. And that's, so my position is then proven by Zechariah 13, because that's exactly what I'm contending tonight, that the prophets, the true prophets, passed out of the land of the Messiah's rule during the time period, I'm talking about a time period of years, time period of the first coming of Christ, not the time period of the second coming of Christ. You know, Charlie's position doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Zechariah 13 shows there's going to come a time. If you can't figure out when it is, there's going to be a time when these prophets will pass out of the land, but the false prophets will continue on. But Charlie's position doesn't even allow for that. He thinks the true prophets will continue on right up until the end of the world. There's never going to be a time when we have false prophets, but not true prophets. But Zechariah chapter 13, verse 2, verses 3 through 4 show there is going to be a time like that. Trust me, this passage is proving we're in that time, friends and neighbors. And then Charlie said, 1 Corinthians 12, that God set prophets in the church. But Charlie, that doesn't tell the duration. We agree that God set prophets in the church. The disagreement, the difference for us tonight, the debate tonight is over what is the duration of the prophets, the prophecy, and the tongues. 1 Corinthians 13 and Zechariah 13, the only passages in the Bible that tell us the duration of the miraculous gift. Charlie says, well, God put them in chapter 12 and took them out in chapter 13, like I believe they only lasted one chapter. No, they were already in the church before Paul wrote 1 Corinthians 12, first of all. And when he wrote chapter 13, he wasn't saying they were stopping right then. He was saying when that which is perfect has come. He was predicting it to be in the future. That happened years down the road. We could estimate 40, 60, 80, 100 years down the road. So he didn't put them in and then just one chapter later, 20, 15 minutes later, take them out. They were in there for who knows how long, 60 or 80 years, I don't know. And then Charlie said, Pat, it was the part that was to be done away, not the perfect, as if I said it the other way. No, Charlie, that's exactly how I said it, just like you said it. It's the part that's to be done away, 1 Corinthians 13, verse 9. It's not the perfect is to be done away. The parts will be done away when the perfect has come. We've proven that this completed New Testament law, revelation, is the perfect. Therefore, since it has come, let's suppose that it came in 100 A.D. I don't know the exact year, but suppose it were 100 A.D. Then that means that the gift stopped at the time of 100 A.D. Do you see that? So we agree, Charlie, that it was the parts that were to be done away when the perfect was to come, and we still have the perfect today. So he mistakenly said that Pat talked like the perfect hasn't come yet. No, I talk like the perfect has come. Charlie was trying to prove to us that the perfect has come by noticing James 1, verse 25. Well, Charlie, that's my point. That's my proof. Everybody turn to James 1, 25. That's what I'm contending for. I'm saying the perfect has come. James 1, 25 could help us to see that. When it calls the Word of God perfect, it says, whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty. That's exactly what I said the perfect was in 1 Corinthians 13. It was the law of God. You see that? What it's talking about in James 1:25. I said the perfect has come. We do have the complete New Testament law of God. And when it came, then the parts, the miraculous gifts were done away. Thank you for helping us out with James 1:25. That just added to my point. That's exactly what I was trying to show. That the perfect has already come and it's talking about the Word of God. James 1:25 calls the Word of God perfect or complete. And then while we're in that context, look at James 1:17. He says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variableness, neither shadow of turning. But that doesn't tell the duration necessarily of any gifts that God might give. For example, God gave the gift of the Ark of the Covenant. God gave Moses a staff when he led them out of Egypt, right? That he could turn to snakes, right? God, Aaron's rod that budded. God gave many gifts in the Old Testament that Charlie doesn't believe are still around today. They don't exist today. So yes, God does give a lot of good gifts. That doesn't necessarily tell us how long that we have them. See, it doesn't. The gifts from God, the miraculous gifts, were good. They were all good. But the issue tonight is, what was their duration? And then the last part of the verse, it says, with whom there is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Charlie made the point basically that, well, God doesn't change His mind, so if He gives us the gifts, they have to go on forever. That's what he said, because God doesn't change His mind. Well, Charlie, let's see how that reasoning would work with circumcision. God told the Israelites to be circumcised. Does that prove it goes on forever? Now, I'm not talking about spiritual circumcision. I'm talking about literal circumcision, physical circumcision. Or do you agree with me, Charlie, that literal physical circumcision, that's no longer binding today? What about animal sacrifices? God required them to do animal sacrifices in the Old Testament. Charlie's reasoning, his argument with me, says God never changes His mind, that would mean that we still have to do animal sacrifices today. Oh, there are all kinds of things we can talk about. That's not what this verse is talking about, that God never changes His mind. Well, Hebrews chapter 7, verse 12 says, "For the priesthood being changed, there is made also of necessity a change of the law." In other words, then priests could only come from the tribe of Levi. Now, Jesus came from the tribe of Judah. Well, so it changed. And so the writer of Hebrews is making the point that the law must have changed since our priest came from a tribe that was not of the tribe of Levi. Hebrews 7, verse 12. So God can change things. He has a different law for the children of Israel than He has for us today. Charlie knows that. And so he completely misused this verse to try to prove his position. Let's go back and review my original argument from 1 Corinthians 13. Because it doesn't look like Charlie even understood what I was saying. He had it mixed up. He thought I was saying the perfect was done away and the parts were to continue on. No, the very opposite. Verse 9 of 1 Corinthians 13 says, "These parts," it's talking about the miraculous gifts, verse 8 through 9, "tongues, miraculous knowledge, prophecy, they will be done away." There's no doubt it's saying they will stop at one time. The only question is when. It says they will stop when that which is perfect has come. So the only question is that which is perfect, this thing that is complete, the perfect, is that referring to complete revelation, or is that referring to a complete second coming of Christ, as Charlie would have you to think? Well, we showed in the first part of this speech from verse 13 that it can't be the second coming of Christ. We've shown from Zechariah chapter 13 that the prophets would pass out of the land of the Messiah's rule in the time period of the first coming of Christ, not the second time period of the second coming of Christ, so it can't be that. What is it talking about here? Well, as I went to Luke 11:36, and to help us illustrate this, this verse in verse 10 just says they're going to stop these gifts, miraculous gifts, when that which is perfect is come. It doesn't tell us in words in verse 10 what that which is perfect or complete refers to. But just like in Luke 11:36, when it didn't identify for us the part, but it did the whole body, we can identify what the perfect is by looking back to the part. Because we know they're going to be of the same nature because they're set in contrast. Like I said, if you have part of an apple pie, what would be the whole of that? A piece of an apple pie? The whole would be a whole apple pie, not a whole pecan pie. So let's figure out what the perfect would be. Well, it would have to be of the same nature as the part. Now, is the part in verse 9, it says, "We know in part, we prophesy in part," is that a partial second coming of Christ? If it were, then the perfect in verse 10 would be the perfect second coming of Christ. Of course, we know it doesn't even make any sense to say a partial first, a second coming of Christ. No, the thing in part in verse 9 is, and you, I think you agree with this, it's the means by which God revealed the New Testament law in part. In parts. Back then, you didn't have the New Testament completely all written down so that the Christians, the followers of God, could study the New Testament law as a book. And so the preachers prophesied. God told them what to say. The Christians spoke in tongues. God gave them knowledge miraculously, talking about spiritual knowledge. That's the way God revealed His New Testament law at that time in parts. That's what's in part. What it's saying is those things will be done away. The means by which God revealed His New Testament law in parts, the need for those will go away when we have the whole complete New Testament revelation. The perfect has to refer to the complete revelation because it has to be of the same nature as the part. Just like the whole of a piece of apple pie has to be a whole apple pie, not a whole pecan pie. And the thing in part, again, I'm repeating myself for emphasis, is the means by which God revealed His New Testament law in part. It was the way He gave the revelation, the instrument, how He did it. And so the perfect has to be of the same nature. The only difference is one is in part, the other is the whole thing. It has to be the whole way. It has to be the way that God revealed His New Testament law in whole, in full, in complete. It has to be this. And that came 1800 or 1900 years ago. And that's when the gifts ceased. So we prove from 1 Corinthians 13 that these miraculous gifts that were under discussion tonight ceased then when they got the whole New Testament law, the New Testament put in the book, just like the Old Testament had been put in a book years before. We prove from Zechariah 13, that chapter, that in the time period of the first coming of Christ, the true prophets would pass out of the land of the Messiah's rule. We proved it beyond any shadow of doubt. It's just a matter of whether you're willing to accept it. Do you love God enough to accept the Bible? Do you love falsely speaking in tongues more than you love God? If you love God and His Word, then you will accept the truth of what this chapter tells us. Are you willing to do it? Do you love God enough? I beg of you, love God enough to accept and obey His Word instead of doing what you want to do. Thank you very much.